Cloddies and Poddies, I have to begin with a grovelling apology because last week we were perhaps distracted by the minor matter of the American presidential nonsense and neglected to mention a very important event, a significant report released in Brussels. Now, the report was on an issue we've covered regularly on the programme, the International Monetary Fund and the crises in Greece, Ireland and Portugal. A regular commentator on the Greek financial crisis became a participant in trying to solve the problems of the Greek economy and its relationship with the EU. Yiannis Varoufakis became Greek finance minister, attempted to take on the Troika, the IMF, the European Commission, and the European Central Bank. And boy, did he cop it from the financial media, amongst others, being deemed inappropriate, an obstacle to solving the Greek debt crisis. Now we are dealing with a vindicated Varoufakis because the report released at the end of July made a startling confession. The whole Greek crisis was a stitch-up by the IMF and the EU. The report, done by the Independent Evaluation Office of the IMF, confessed they got it all wrong. There's a marvellous quote by Ambrose Evans-Pritchard that sums it up. The International Monetary Fund's top staff misled their own board, made a series of calamitous misjudgments in Greece, became euphoric cheerleaders for the Euro project, ignored warning signs of impending crisis, and collectively failed to grasp an elemental concept of currency theory. So let us welcome to our little wireless program the vindicated Varoufakis. Welcome back, Yiannis, and I suppose in a bizarre way it's time to congratulate you.
No, it's not. No time for congratulations, Philip, because the humanitarian crisis which is unfolding as a result of this particularly toxic bailout are unfolding around me, around the southern parts of Europe, and indeed they're infecting the more advanced parts of Europe, the northern parts, which are now suffering their own form of the crisis as a repercussion of what of this crime against logic that took place in Greece in 2010. The result is the ongoing march of misanthropy, of racism, of the ultra-right wing.
Now, it's noble of you to depersonalise it, but God help us, it couldn't get much more personal because not only the IMF report surfaced, but within the last 10 days, the Greek parliament tried to pass a motion condemning you for, quote, daring to counter the Troika while Minister of Finance in the first 6 months of 2015. Are you to be dragged off to the Greek version of the Tower?
Unfortunately, I wasn't even given my chance to defend myself in court. My response to the representatives of the Troika in the Greek parliament that tried to have me indicted was, bring it on, give me an opportunity. I will face you down wherever you want, in an amphitheater, in parliament, in a court. But they didn't. In the end, they chickened out, Philip. This is all about political theater, after all.
So one of the key points was the EU put political pressure on the IMF to change their usual policy for dealing with debt relief. And it seems this pressure began as far back as 2010, long before you were or can be held irresponsible.
Indeed. And you know, this is a criticism I've been waging against the IMF. You see, usually when you have a political opponent, what you do is you criticize their dogmas, their assumptions, and the conclusions that they draw from those dogmas and assumptions. But my criticism of the IMF and of the Troika, of the creditors, the international creditors of countries like Greece, Ireland, and so on, is that what they were doing was violating their own principles. So to put it simply, in the case of the IMF, the plan that they devised for Greece was designed to leave Greece in a disastrous economic shape, even if you believed in the dogmas and to the way of thinking of the IMF. And that's why I call it a crime against logic. But let me inform you of something that we haven't had a chance to talk about in the many discussions we've had. First time I met a representative of the IMF was a certain gentleman that goes by the name Paul Thompson. He was responsible for the Greek program back in 2010. And then that disaster led to his promotion to becoming the IMF's European chief. He's responsible for the IMF for Europe as a whole. First thing he said to me when we met, it was in a secret room in a Parisian hotel, that was in February 2015, was that I was right. And that the IMF got it completely wrong. And that they had to haircut, that we had to find an agreement along the lines of what I was proposing, a massive haircut of Greek debt. So when people ask me, well, were you too confrontational with the IMF and the Troika, you know, I'm baffled. They came to me, first meeting, and they confessed.
The London Telegraph headline is interesting. IMF admits disastrous love affair with the euro and apologises for the immolation of Greece. It's a powerful word, isn't it, immolation?
But it is exactly what has happened. Let me remind our audience of the recession that we have to have, 1991, remember Paul Keating, which was a big recession in the sense that it changed the cultural politics of Australia, and it gave the working class in Australia a sense that they were being left behind. Well, that recession effectively reduced total Australian national income by 1%. In the case of Greece, we lost 28%. Imagine if the recession of 1991 was 28 times worse. Then we would be talking about a complete catastrophe for Australia. So the word immolation is not untoward, I believe.
You've used the term waterboarding, a nation being waterboarded by the high and mighty Troika functionaries.
Well, this is the moment of vindication that you were referring to before. For me, fiscal waterboarding was my term for explaining what the Troika and the IMF were doing to Greek governments, including our own, but not just our own. They bring you to the moment of suffocation, asphyxiation, where you are going to default on your pensioners, on your creditors, and then they give you a little bit of money to stop it, like a waterboarder gives you a little bit more oxygen so you don't die before pushing your head again under the surface of the water. And I was being accused of having used undiplomatic language. But if you read the reports, the IMF's own reports on what they were doing, they're describing fiscal waterboarding. And let me just quote something. The country was forced to go through a staggering squeeze. It set off a self-feeding downward spiral. The automatic stabilizers were not allowed to operate, thus aggravating the procyclicality of the fiscal policy, which exacerbated the contraction. Well, this is a more scientific language for fiscal waterboarding, and this comes straight from the IMF.
So the mea culpa on the part of the IMF is too little too late, and as you pointed out, no one's been fired. In fact, people have been promoted.
You see, when a huge institution like the IMF, that is exceedingly powerful in the sense that it has the capacity to influence the lives of hundreds of millions of people, when it feels confident enough to confess to its sins in order to maintain its right to repeat them, then we know that we are in a highly problematic world.
Have you received any sort of apology from your ex-boss, the Prime Minister?
Oh, not really, because there's nothing that he doesn't know. There's nothing that he was not perfectly aware of. The reason why Alexis Tsipras, my former Prime Minister, well, he's still Prime Minister, but he's former in terms of being my Prime Minister, the difference of opinion between Alexis and myself was on whether we should capitulate or not, not on what brought Greece to that state. We had a pact between us, an agreement, that we would enter government to do good and not to capitulate in order to preserve our positions. And that's where we disagreed.
You know, suddenly I'm remembering fragments of our conversations over the years, long before you got the job. You were telling us that people were And this wasn't happening anywhere else in the world. The people were leaving the big cities like Athens and going back to the villages. That was the first hint of what lay ahead.
This process has stopped now, and it has stopped because, as you know from your own endeavors in rural parts, the life of a farmer is not an easy one, especially when there's no credit and the marketplace is very stressed. So now, after there was an attempt by city dwellers to return to the land, to the ancestral lands, in order to survive and to flourish, after those efforts failed, now we have a massive exodus from the country. We're losing thousands of people every day, especially the younger and the better educated.
So you're now suffering a brain drain?
Oh, yes. It's massive. It's the worst kind of cost that has been inflicted upon Greek society. We've lost, I would say, 400,000 of well-educated graduates from all sorts of different universities around the world, including Greek ones, but mainly American, German, French, British universities, who had come back after their studies. They had tried to make a living here, to be creative. They failed due to the crisis, and now they are all over the world, wherever you go, Philip. You go to Shanghai, you go to Shenzhen, you go to Ecuador, you go to London, you'll find them.
That's one hell of a diaspora, isn't it?
Well, Greece has always... The Greeks and the Irish have always shared this terrible fate. Poor nations, usually trumped upon by great powers, the result being in diaspora. But in the 1990s and 2000s, both the Irish and the Greeks were hoping that that ended. Indeed, we were attracting migrants from elsewhere because our economies were supposedly doing quite well. And our nations allowed themselves to be lulled in the false sense of having overcome the emigration pain, the pain of immigration, of losing your own people and your kids and so on and so forth. But now we're back there.
Tell me what it looks like, what it feels like in Athens these days. The things you're talking about are not necessarily visible.
They're not visible to the tourist because the tourist areas are doing pretty well. The trials and tribulations of Turkey, of Egypt, of other popular tourist resorts have attracted tourists to Greece. Greeks themselves are very adept at enjoying misery, of extracting joy and pleasure and music and drama and theatre out of economic crisis and misery. So it's not a glum nation. It's not a nation that you look upon and say, oh my God, these people look very unhappy. But if you start talking to them, the number one question that people ask me, especially youngsters, is there any hope in this country or should I migrate? This is the kind of narrative and the pain that goes along with it, not amongst those who don't want to leave, but they are considering leaving, but also amongst the elderly, their parents who are contemplating life without the young ones.
My guest is the vindicated Vera Farkas, but not entirely vengeful, although you say that the apology is a waste of air, but it needs to be followed up by the immediate dismissal of at least three functionaries, and the first on your list is the aforementioned Paul Thompson.
In any business, in any corporation, in any well-functioning organization, a spectacular failure like that which was overseen by Paul Thompson would lead to at least one dismissal, the dismissal of the person who is responsible for it. If General Motors, BHP, or any organization faced a 30% reduction in their capital value as a result of the actions of one man or the failures of one man, that one man would have been history. It is only in the organs of suprastate organizations like the IMF, like the European Commission or the European Central Bank, that spectacular failure leads to enhanced power. And this, if you want, Philip, this is the real reason behind the crisis of politics, of democracy, and of the economy of Europe. That there is no mechanism for selecting for success. Now we have an inverse Darwinian process, where you have natural selection on the basis of failure. The more failed you are, the higher you climb up on the slippery slope.
Okay, tell me about a couple of other prominent waterboarders, Thomas Weiser and Declan Costello. I take it they're lingering on?
Of course they are. Thomas Weiser is the effective governor of most of Europe. Nobody knows who he is. This is why I expose his name in my blogs and when I give speeches here and there. He runs, he's the president of the shadow of the Eurogroup. The Eurogroup is the body, the informal body of the ministers of finance, plus the big wigs from the IMF, the European Central Bank, and so on. Behind them, in the shadows of the Eurogroup, there's something called the Euro Working Group. Nobody knows who these people are, because they are functionaries, they are bureaucrats. But they meet before the Euro does, and they make all the real decisions. And the president of the Euro Working Group is this gentleman, Thomas Weiser, whom I know very well. During that period of negotiations, we had many interesting exchanges and conversations. And I can assure you that he wields more power than any elected finance minister, any prime minister, any president in the European Union. So it's quite awesome how much power is invested on a bureaucrat that is actually not particularly skillful either, and whose failures over the last 5-6 years in managing the Eurozone crisis has not resulted, not for one second, in any questions being posed about his tenure.
Okay, blame aside, in the light of this report, is it likely the situation for Greece might be reconsidered?
No, I don't think so. As I told you, the first meeting I had with Paul Thompson, with the gentleman whose dismissal I'm calling for now, was a very pleasant one and very convivial and consensual. He agreed with me that the criticisms that I was waging were correct. He agreed with me that he even gave me a number concerning the number of billions of euros that we must lob off the Greek public debt. It was 56 billion that we should agree within a week to get rid of. And the same gentleman, Paul Thompson, a few weeks later in the Eurogroup, when he spoke officially in the Eurogroup, he said exactly the opposite, that the Greek debt should not be cut, that Greece should reduce further pensions and so on and so forth, instead of having our debt restructured. So these people are perfectly capable of issuing a report that is an official mea culpa, an official apology for the mess, while at the very same time using the warm, cuddly feelings that the publication of that report has created in order to do exactly the same thing as they were doing before. It's the expression I use, confessing to the sin in order to repeat it.
Okay, the IMF doesn't do a U-turn on their policies, but the report calls for more transparency. PR?
Oh, absolutely. I've been calling for transparency. I've been asking for the meetings of the Eurogroup and the Euro Working Group to be live-streamed. If they want transparency, why don't they do that? So that we know what they actually say.
Well, your catch cry is transparency in Europe now, isn't it?
Indeed. So anybody who wants to offer us European citizens transparency is going to be met with open arms by me and my colleagues, except that they don't do it. They talk about transparency, but they never deliver it. And they don't deliver it for a very good reason. If Europeans could see and hear with their eyes and with their ears what is being said on their behalf behind closed doors, they would take up arms.
Yanis, thanks for your time. Yanis Varoufakis, Greek economist, academic, former finance minister for Greece, and he recently formed the DiEM25 movement, Democracy in Europe Movement 2025. Good on you, Yanis.